Okay, we're holding on for Vav Amud Beis, the first line of the wide line, the end of the line. We're still talking about Dinim of Kriya. So the Gemara says, Ad Heichan Kereya, how far down on the clothing can a person tear? In other words, we talked about yesterday, there can be a case where a person tore Kriya for one relative and then adds to the tear for another relative. Or we had, for example, a person sees the site of the destroyed Beis Hamikdash first, and then he sees the rest of Yerushalayim, and therefore he rips for the Beis Hamikdash and adds for Yerushalayim. So how far down on the garment can he rip that it's still considered a valid kriya rather than starting a new one from the neckline? So ad tiburay. So the answer is until his navel. The yesh omim ad libo. Yesh omim, not that far down, only until his heart. And that opinion says, even though there's not a solid raya for it, because the din of kriya itself, we said, is maybe deraisa, or at least it has an asmachta in the Torah, but the details of kriya certainly are only derabanan. So even though we don't have a solid proof that kriya can be only until the heart, we still have a remembrance of it. As the pasuk says, the Navi tells the people, tear your hearts, not your clothes. In other words, he tells them, do tshuva, tear out the rishus, the yetzahara from your hearts, rather than having to be in a bad situation and tear your clothes. So we see that there's a certain association with, between kriya and the heart. So therefore, that opinion says only down until the heart. And then again, the first opinion says all the way down, further down, all the way until his navel. Well, he gila tiburay. So what happens once the rip reaches all the way until the navel? So let's say again, for example, a person's one relative passed away, so therefore he tore kriya. Then another relative passed away, and he added to that existing kriya, and so forth, until now the rip goes all the way down to his navel. So then, marchik shalosh etzbois for Korea. So then he has to find a place, three etzbois or more away from the original one, and start a new kriya beginning from neckline. Mismala milafonov, eventually when the clothing gets full of rips in the front, machziru ilachorov, then what you can do is you don't have to throw away the garment yet. You can still you turn it around backwards. And then you start again from what's the new front. Remember, you know, the clothes in those days were made in such a way that you could easily wear them, as we talked about yesterday. You could turn them upside down, you could turn them front to back or whatever, and they'd still be wearable. So therefore you do that. Mismala milamaila, eventually the whole top of it becomes full of rips. You had a lot of relatives, let's say, who passed away, or he visited Yerushalayim or whatever a lot of times. That he can turn it upside down, and then he has a whole new, then again, what used to be the hem is now the neckline, and now we can start tearing from that as well. Continues the Braisa. Now, if a person to begin with tears kriya from the bottom edge of the garment or from the sides, then he's not yotze. Now, when we say the sides, the Rishonim bring an opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak ibn Geus, who said he was a Rishon in the times that he was a chaver of the Rif, but he wrote a sefer on the dinim of Avelus. So he writes that minatz dodin would mean, for example, under the sleeves. And the Ramban disagrees with that and says minatz dodin would be any place that's not the front of the garment. So, for example, a person tears along the side or whatever. Anyway, so those lo yotza, then he's not yotza. The proper mitzvah of kriya is it has to be done in front. The exception is that a Kohen Gadol, when one of his relatives passes away, he tears from the bottom, because a Kohen Gadol is actually not really supposed to rip kriya anyway. So therefore, so he's just ripping from the bottom as like a zecher of avelos or a little bit of covered for his parents or whatever. But he doesn't do the actual kriya. Therefore, he doesn't do it from the top. He only does it from the bottom. Okay, so now we said before that you can have where a person tears kriya and then he adds to that existing kriya. So how far apart can they be that he, how close or how far apart do the two deaths have to be for him to make a new rip as opposed to continuing the old one? So the Gemara says, "Pligu bar Rav Masna uma Ukva." Rav Masna and Ma'ukva disagree on that point. Both of them are saying in the name of Avur de Shmuel and Levi. So it can mean that each one of them is saying in the name of one of those, or it can mean that both of them are saying that Avur de Shmuel and Levi set a din, but they're arguing what the din is. Anyway, Chad Omar, one between Rav Masna and Ma'ukva, one says, Kol Shiva Kireya, if the new death takes place during Shiva of the first one, then he has to rip a new Kriya. La'acha Shiva Moisif, and if any time after Shiva, then he can add to the existing Kriya. Which we talked about yesterday. We said that Ein Moisif and Alkera over the Imoi, we're there. You have different explanations. Doesn't mean that a person made a rip for his parents. He can't add to that rip. He would always have to start a new one. Or does it mean the other way around, maybe? Doesn't mean that you can't make your parents be an addition for an existing rip. You would always have to start a new one. But here we're talking about, let's say we're talking about among the other relatives. So let's say, for example, a person's brother passed away and he tore Kriya, and now his sister passes away. So between Rav Masna and Ma'ukva, one of them is saying, if the new one was during Shiva, then you would need a new Kriya. La'acha Shiva Moisif, but if it's after Shiva, then you only need to add there. V'chadoma, the other one says, Kol Shloshim Kodeya, La'acha Shloshim Moisif. The other one says the cutoff point is Shloshim. If it was within the Shloshim, then he'd have to make a new Kriya. If it was after Shloshim, then he could add to the existing one. So Maskif Lo Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira says, I have a contradiction on the one who says that within 7 days you'd need a new Kriya. Manda Oma Kol Shiva Kriya. Now, why would you say that a person needs a new Kriya within the 7 days? Why can't he add to the existing one? Amai, why would that be? It must be Delonitam the Shololoi. It must be because since during the 7 days, you're not even allowed to be Shololit, to baste it with a couple of loose stitches like we learned before. So therefore, if now the person rips more, then it doesn't even look like a new rip. So it's not obvious that he ripped the chlal. Whereas after Shiva, he already was sholol. He already basted the stitches. So now it's noticeable that he's tearing something new. Well, Rav Zeira asks, Ela hoda amamar, what about this that we learned in a braisa, Isha shelalto la'alter? We learned a few days ago that a woman who tears kriya is allowed to baste it up right away, even during Shiva. Hochinami. So you're going to say then by the same, are you going to say the same thing that that within Shiva she should be allowed to continue the Kriya rather than start a new one? After all, when we're saying over here, you're saying over here, Kol Shiva Kodeya, La'acha Shiva Moisif, you're not distinguishing between men and women. But if the point is that you can only add to the Kriya after it was basted, well, then a woman should be able to continue the Kriya even during Shiva, and only a man should not. The answer is no, that's not a proof, because Hasa Mishum Kvod Ishahu. The reason why she's allowed to baste it right away is because of her covered, so she's not walking around with torn garments and her skin is exposed. So it's not really that she's sholalit. In other words, mitzad the dinim of Avelus, she wouldn't be allowed to. Mitzad covered Abrius, we allow her to. But nevertheless, we're still going to say that until the end of Shiva, if she has a new relative who passes away, then she's going to have to make a new Kriya. Then Rav Zeira continues asking, Manda Oma Kol Shloshim Pereya. Now, we said Rav Masna and Ma'ukva, one of them says that after Shiva he can add to the new rip, and the other one says after Shloshim. So according to the opinion that it's after 30, then he has that within the 30 days he has to rip a new Kriya, and only after 30 days can he continue the existing one. Well, Amai. Bepashtos, we would say, why is that? What's the difference between before and after Shloshim? The reason must be Deloy Nitan La'achosay. Presumably, the reason is because since during Shloshim, you're not allowed to completely sew it up, like we talked yesterday, Ichui Alexandri, where it's sewn up in a way, where it's sewn up professionally, or even sewn up in a way that you can't even tell that it was ripped. Well, then you have to ask, Elo La'ovil La'imo Deloy Nitan La'achosay La'olam Hokinami. So are you telling me then that when it comes to parents, a person tears kriya for his parents, and he's never allowed to completely sew it up, as we've learned previously, hochinami? So you're going to say then that for parents, you're never allowed to add to the existing rip? And the answer is, again, hosim shum kvod avi v'imayu. The answer is no, that's a special thing. in principle, from the point of view of the dinim of kriya, you would be allowed to sew it up after 30 days, only because of the covet of his parents. Are we saying that he has to leave it unsewn up forever? So therefore, we can still consider as though it was sewn up, which it would have been had it not been his parents, and therefore it's legitimate to add to it after shloshim for a different relative. Or we said yesterday that maybe you can't add other. So we said yesterday again that maybe a person tore kriya for his parents is allowed to add to that kriya for other relatives. So that's what we'd be talking about over here. He tore kriya for one of his parents. Then after shloshim, according to this opinion, we're saying, even though he can't permanently sew it up, nevertheless, another mess passes away, since if it hadn't been his parents, he would have been able to sew it up. Therefore, we'll allow him to continue doing kriya from that existing rift rather than starting a new one. Okay, the halacha is like the opinion called shiva. So therefore, after shiva, the person would be allowed to continue the rift rather than starting a new one. More dinim about kriya, tana rabbanan, hayotze beged karua lifnei mes. If a person goes out in front of a mess to a levaya with ripped clothing, where he didn't rip it because of misa, he happened to have his clothing was ripped, or even it was ripped for a previous mess, hareze goizel samesin vesachayim, then he's stealing from the dead and from the living. Because, like this, everybody is fooled and everybody thinks that he tore kriya for this mess and he didn't. So therefore, he's stealing from the mess and he's taking away the cupboard that should be appropriate for him. And he's stealing from the living because the living people misunderstand and think that he just tore kriya now when he didn't. Another din, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, ha'omer l'chaveri hashileni chalukha, if one person says to another, lend me your shirt, the elach va'avaker es abba shulchoyla, because I want to go and visit my father who's sick, v'holach u'motzei shemes, and then he goes and finds that his father passed away. So because he told his friend that he's going to visit his father who's sick, therefore his friend should realize that there's a possibility that the father might pass away and therefore that he might have to tear kriya. Therefore kireya, so he can rip the garment, u'ma'achoy, and eventually he sews it up completely, because even though usually after a parent we said you can't sew it up completely, but here since it's not his shirt, he's allowed to. When he gets back home, then he returns the shirt, and he reimburses the other guy for the loss in value of the garment caused by the rip. Because after all, it was ripped and then it was sewn up. Fine, it was sewn up, but it was sewn up professionally, but still there's a loss in value of the garment. Before it was whole, and now there's a rip which was sewn up. So therefore, you have to make up the difference for him. The im loy hodiyo, but if when he borrowed the shirt, he didn't tell him he was going to visit his father, then he's not allowed to touch it, because then there's no permission, then there's no implied permission to tear it at all. We talked about yesterday about tearing kriya for your shalayim and the bis mikdash. There are some people who, what they'll do is they'll borrow a shirt from somebody else, and that way they figure they're potter on the grounds of this. But the poskim say that that's also a very weak thing to do. It's pretty obvious that you're borrowing the shirt just for that purpose of getting out of kriya, and therefore it's a harama, and you're not supposed to do that. All right, continues the braisa, another braisa, tanan abonon, choyla shemes loy mes. When you have a sick person whose relative passed away, ein modiyin oisei shemes, you do not inform him that relative passed away. Shemati torif daitei olav, because he might go crazy. He's already sick himself. He's not thinking straight. Now you tell him his relative passed away. Who knows what it might do to him? Sometimes you have nowadays. You'll find sometimes they'll have a notice about somebody passed away and about his levaya and a shiva and whatever, and there'll be a notice in it. Please don't inform so and so from the family. That's based on our Gemara over here. Very famously, also for example, when Rabbi Sura Leib, the Rebbe's brother, passed away, the Rebbe hid it from Rebbe Tzimchana, and she never found out about it for the next 12 years until she passed away. Famously, the Rebbe used to send letters written in his brother's handwriting so that it would look like he's still writing to her, etc. So that was an example of this kind of thing, because she was already old and weak, and the news that her son passed away might affect her health.
So therefore, ve'ein makarin b'fanav. So you don't whip kriya in front of him for the same reason. Or mashatkin es hanoshim miponav. And if there are women there who usually would be crying and mourning, as we're going to learn at the end of the masechta, then you tell them to be quiet in the presence of the choyla, also he doesn't find out. Another din, umakarin lakotan mipnei agmas nefesh. Suppose that you have a cotton is one of the relatives of the mess. So he himself is not chayev in avelus, but nevertheless the adults around him to help rip his clothes for him, not because he himself is chayev in avelus, but because of agmas nefesh. So everybody else should feel bad and see, look at this. This little kid is going out with torn clothes. It brings home to them how terrible it is that his father or mother or whatever relative of it is passed away. Rabbi Yitzchok Ibn Geyus says actually, if the kid is old enough to be of the age of chinuch, then maybe he is obligated in kriya same way as he's obligated in other mitzvahs to rabbanon. But so according to that, he would be talking about a kid who's below that age. Another din, the koden of chomer v'chamoisa mipnei kvoid ishtay. A person tears kriya when his in-laws pass away, when his father or mother-in-law pass away, because of the kavod of his wife. So we talked about previously in the perek about to what extent does a person have to follow the dinim of avelos in the presence of their spouse as covered for their in-laws. So this is part of that. V'amar Rapapa, and Rapapa says, here's another din. Ton of the Evil Rabsi, we learn in Masechta Evil Rabsi, which is better known as Masechta Smachos. Oval lo yaniach tinik b'sei chekoi, an oval should not put a kid in his lap, a baby in his lap, because that's going to cause him to laugh. V'nimtim is gana al abrius, and then it looks degraded in the eyes of people that he's an oval. Why is he sitting there laughing? So therefore, he shouldn't do that. We said in the Mishnah, Ve'ein Mavrin al mitis skufis, or Ela al mitis skufis. We said in the Mishnah that the Suda Savra, the first Suda after the burial, which where other people bring food for the Ovo. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it in more detail in the in connection with the next Mishnah. So Ein Mavrin, so the Girsa we have in front of us says Ein Mavrin al mitis skufis. You don't give the Suda Savra on right side up beds. You turn the beds over, which we're going to talk about the details of that soon. In those days, of course, they used to, they didn't sit on chairs to eat. They would recline on couches or beds. So those are the beds we're talking about over here. So we're saying that the beds are not turned right side up. They're turned upside down. Kfiya samitha, as we talked about the other day, and we're going to talk about in detail soon. On the other hand, it really in the Mishnah it said Ein Mavrin Elam with the scopers. So then it was the other way around that the Suda Savra is only on upright beds that are the right side up. So you have there is a machloikus among the Rishonim whether the dinim that we're talking about over here apply only on Chol HaMoed or during the rest of the year. So Tanan Abanim, we learn in a Braisa, Haholach Vesa Oval. If a person is going to an oval to be Menachem Oval, so if his heart was gas in him, and we'll explain in a second what that means, yavruhu amitis kruyis, then they should give the Suda Savra on overturned beds. The imlav, and if not, yavruhu amitis skupis, if not, then they should give him the Suda Savra on right side up bed. Now, what's liboy gasboy? Most of the time in Shas, the expression liboy gasboy means that one person is on very friendly terms with the other one. So some of the Rishonim learn that in this connection, that's what it means, in other words. So we're saying that normally the Menachemim would be sitting on beds that are right side up, and the Ovo would be sitting on beds that are on an overturned bed. On the other hand, if Liboy Gasboy, if the Menachem, if the person who's coming to give the Suda Savra is on very friendly terms with the Ovel, then they can both be sitting on Mitis Kuyas, they can both be sitting together on overturned beds. So that's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding Liboy Gasboy means if Rashi Ksaviad says this, for example, that it means if the Ovel himself is in a good mood. So you see, in other words, the oval is not as sad as you would expect him to be. So then what you do is you have him sit on an upside down bed, on an overturned bed, in order to eat, in hopes that that will soften his heart and make him realize more what a tragedy he's experienced with his relative passing away, and therefore you do that. Otherwise, if already he's sad anyway, then he can sit on mitzvah skolos. And then again, within all that, you have the machlokes of, are we talking about only on Chol HaMoed, or are we talking about throughout the rest of the year? So the Gemara continues, Rava Isra Be Milsa. One time Rava, a bad thing happened to him, which is the Gemara's way of saying that one of his relatives passed away. Ola Gabe Abba Bar Mauta Duhu Abba Bar Manyumi. So Abba Bar Mauta, otherwise known as Abba Bar Manyumi, came to visit him and bring him the Soda Sagra. Rava Zokif. So Rava set the bed right side up and sat on it. Abba Bar for the Soda Sagra. Abba Bar Mauta coffee, whereas Abba Bar Mauta turned the bed over. Omar, so Rava says, Tama lesbe daita lahai tsurhum and abonon. Look how much this young Tamad Chacham, Abba Bar Mauta, is lacking in das. But why is he doing that? So according to the first explanation, the vote is that Rava is saying this Abba Bar Mauta is not on such friendly, intimate terms with Rava that he should be sitting on mitzvah kufiyas. He should be sitting on a mitzvah skufa, like the same way as anybody else. Only I, the oval, should be sitting on a mitzvah kufiya. According to the second explanation, Rava is saying, what is he thinking? That I'm liber gaspo, that I'm treating the whole thing casually, and I'm not sad enough. It's not for him to decide that. So therefore, it's not his business to be turning over the bed in order to make me feel worse. One point that's mentioned in this connection is that it may be, now Rabbi Yitzchak Ibn Gaius mentions this point, that if maybe it's not right that the Menachemim should be sitting higher than the oval, that would be a reason maybe that the oval should ordinarily be sitting on a bed that's right side up, and only in the cases that we're saying over here, where Libre Gaspoy, only then does he sit on an overturned bed. Okay. Another din. When a person is going from one place to another, so what's the scenario? We'll talk about in a second. If he's able to reduce the amount of business that he's doing, you might, then he should reduce that. If not, then he should join together with other people and do business together with them. So what are we talking about over here? Tosfos brings several possibilities. One possibility is that while he's on a trip, he finds out that one of his relatives, his parents, or whoever passed away. So now, before we learned previously on Daf Chof Beis, we said that when it comes to doing business, we said when it's any other relative, then he's allowed to continue doing business, because we said he's not allowed to do malacha, but we said business is not malacha. But for his parents, he has to not. So here we're talking about it. So one possibility is that we're talking about over here that. So one possibility is we are talking about over here his parents passed away, but he was on the road at the time. So if it had been any other relative, we wouldn't even require him to change what he's doing business-wise at all. Because it's his parents, usually he should be breaking off his business altogether. But because he's holach baderech, then therefore we're going to allow him to, if possible, if he can't suspend his business altogether, then Yigagli Mohen will join together with the other business people and the other merchants who are there and sell together with them. That's one possibility. Another possibility Tosfos says is we are talking about other relatives over here. So the other way around, we're saying that because he's traveling on the road and therefore he's not doing so much avelos, because on the road it's kind of hard to do that. So if he had been at home, he would have been allowed to continue his business. Now when he's on the road, we're going to restrict the amount of business that he can do more than if he had been at home. If he had been at home, he could continue his business completely normally for other relatives. But now when he's on the road and therefore he's doing even less avelos, then therefore we want to restrict him with that. So therefore, if he can restrict the amount of business that he does, then he should do that. And if not, then he just does it together with others. Then Tosfos brings a third explanation that it means we're talking about specifically he needs to do business in order to buy food. So he's on the road. He needs more food. If he's at home, he can send other people to the store to get food for him, because he's traveling. He has to get it for himself. And then Tosfos also brings from Rashi that what we're talking about over here is, so all of these explanations assume that we're talking about he's already in Avelus and then he left on a trip. So Tosfos brings from Rashi Ksavyad, that is, that says that we're talking about where he was on the road and then they told him that one of his relatives passed away. So then the reason why we're going to allow him to finish off his business, if necessary, is because after all, when he left, he didn't know none of his relatives had passed away. He wasn't poshea or anything. So therefore, we're going to allow him to finish up his business. If he can reduce his business, if he can suspend his business until after Shiva, then good. And if not, then you galgali mohan, then we do allow him to sell his schoda, because after all, he already took it and was todeach in it, and he wasn't poshea by going. Another din. So now let's talk in more detail about this business of kriya samita, of overturning the bet. So Tana Rabbanan, me'emasai koifin et samitas, at what point do they have to turn over the beds? And mishiyetzim et pesach beisai, as soon as the mess is taken out of the door of the house. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that's what Rabbi Eliezer said. Rabbi Yeshua omer mishi yisasim agolol. Rabbi Yeshua says only once they finish the kvura. Yisasim agolol, Rashi and Tosfos discuss in several places in Shas, what exactly the goylal is. Is the goylal the matseva? So in those times they would put up a matseva right away. Or is it the lid of the aron? And then there are Rishonim who say, we point out the word goylal literally means rolling. So it means, in other words, in those times, as we've learned previously, they would bury people in niches in the walls of a cave. So afterwards they would roll a stone in front of that in order to protect that, and that would be called the goylal. Anyway, Rabbi Yeshua says once that's closed up, meaning that the burial is over, then at that point you turn over the beds. So the Gemara tells Maisa Shemesh Rabbi Gamliel Azokin. It happened that Rabbi Gamliel Azokin passed away. Kivin Sheyotzim Pesach Beisoy. As soon as the body was taken out of the house, Omar Lahem Rabbi Eliezer Pumit Eseichem. So Rabbi Eliezer tells the people in the household, turn over your beds. It's time to start that. The Kivin Shenistam Agolol. Later on, they went and buried Rabbi Gamliel. And then they closed up the goylal, whatever the goylal is, and Rabbi Yeshua, who didn't know what Rabbi Eliezer had told them, tells them to turn over the bed. They told them, we already turned it over by the instructions of the zokin, meaning Rabbi Eliezer, and it's a done deal already. Not necessarily is, when it says over here, Rabbi Gamliel has zokin, is that necessarily correct? It may be that we have to take out the word hazokin. Because when Rabbi Gamliel HaZokin passed away, he passed away even while the Beis Mikdash was still standing. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua were either the pashtus, it seems, very young then. They certainly wouldn't be the ones to be giving orders and instructions of what to do, and they certainly wouldn't be calling Rabbi Eliezer Zokin. So it's more likely that it's supposed to be Rabbi Gamliel without the word HaZokin, and that makes better sense because in his times already, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer were his chaverim, and therefore they could well be the ones telling people instructions what to do. Okay, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Me'emasai Zokfinis Amitis for Erev Shabbos. At what point on Erev Shabbos do you turn the beds right side up? We learned previously, we had a statement of Shmuel a couple of days ago that said that on Shabbos, there's several things which are choiva. You're obligated to, on Shabbos, among other things, turn back over the bed so that you're not doing avelus b'chahetzia. So at what point on Erev Shabbos can you turn the beds right side up? And the answer is mincha olamayla. From mincha time and onwards, Tosfos discusses whether we mean mincha gdola or mincha ktana. By the way, Tosfos also points out in that connection, now we don't do kriya samita nowadays, as we've learned before, because in particular we live among the goyim and they're going to think that we're practicing witchcraft or something. And another point is also, our beds are constructed differently than the ones in the times of the Gemara, and if you turn it over, it won't be as noticeable. With that said, Tosfos says this concept of the oval sitting on an overturned bed is where we get the concept that we have nowadays of an oval sitting on a low chair. Now, it's not exactly the same thing. We don't find in our Gemara over here, we're not saying that you have to turn over the chairs and the benches and things. Nevertheless, it's a smach for that concept of an oval, that an oval sits on a low chair based on that. So you can turn it right side up from Mincha time on Erev Shabbos and onward. Omer, Rav Bahuna, Afapikain, any Yoshev Allah, Ajtersha. Even though it's turned right side up, the oval still cannot sit on it until it gets dark, meaning until Shabbos begins. So we're tuning it back over so that we don't have avelus for pehetia. But nevertheless, he still have to sit. He still can't sit on it. He would still have to sit, like Tosfos is saying, on something else low until Shabbos begins. Ulmatzoy Shabbos, and then when Shabbos is over, afa pishein leleishiv ela yom echad, even though he has only one more day of avelus, he's going to be getting up Sunday morning. Chozer v'koyfer, he would still have to turn back over the beds because he's still doing shiva, and it's only because of Shabbos that he had turned them right side up. Another din in this connection, Tanan Abanan, HaKoifa mitosei, when a person turns over his bed, loy mitosei belvad hu koifa, he doesn't turn over only his bed, ela kol mitos yesh le besef beitzo hu koifa, he has to overturn all the beds that are in his house. Va'afilu yesh le esim mitos va'asodam ha-koimus, even if he has 10 beds in 10 different places, or in 10 different rooms in a house, koifa has kolon, he would have to turn all of them over. Because the idea is, it's not just that the oval. Now the Rambam learns the purpose of Kriyas Amidah is for the oval to sleep on the side with the ropes, and therefore, so the point is, though, even though he's not sleeping on those other beds, nevertheless he'd have to overturn them. Many Rishonim learn that's not necessarily that. He has to turn over the bed for the reason that we talked about near the beginning of the Perek, that Hashem says, I put a ruach in, I put a tzelem alekim in you, and it got overturned, because now the person passed away. So dmus diyokni nasati behenavanes, or I'm going to say mapachtia, I put my tzelem dmus alekim in you, and now because of your averus it was turned over, so therefore you have to turn your beds over. According to many Rishonim, if the ogel wants, after having turned over the bed, he wants to sleep on something else, then he would still be yoytzer. Nevertheless, though, he still has to turn over all the beds in token of that idea. And by the same token, even if you have five brothers and one of them passed away and the other four have houses of their own, kul and koifin, all of them have to turn over their beds in their individual houses. Now, on the other hand, if it was a bed that's reserved for kalim, like you have, for example, in the Mishnayos for an oval and a yortzeit, shloisha trisinain, you have an example of that. You have shalzagogin, for example. You have a bed that's used by glass makers where they put their glassware on that bed. So if you have something like that, in sorach lechboisa, then you don't need to turn it over because that's not the kind of bed that's used for sleeping or sitting on b'chlal. Continues the braisa, dargish in sorach lechboisa, a dargish, which we're going to describe, the Gemara is going to explain soon what a dargish is, in sorach lechboisa, you don't need to turn it over, ela zoik for you, just turn it on its side. Reb Shimon Gamliel says you do something different with a dargish. Dargish matir is karbitov. With a dargish, what you do is you undo the loops. And it falls down by itself. So we'll see. We'll see. The Gemara is going to explain now what a dargish is. And then once we finish that discussion, then we'll understand how a dargish is constructed and what kind of loops we're talking about. So the Gemara says, my dargish, what is a dargish? So Ula says it means a bed of mazel. They used to have, in those days, the person would have a bed reserved in his house. It would be nicely spread and nicely made up, but you would never use it. It was meant that there should be mazel, Rashi says, lishris mazel toivaleh, that good fortune should rest on it. Now, a bunch of the Rishonim ask, isn't that a matter of nichush? That sounds like a very superstitious practice. How is that allowed? Up the Allah. So there's a few answers. The Rosh mentions that the Rosh explains there's a Gemara in Pesachim that says that the Malach in charge of riches is named Nokid, which comes from the word Noki, which means clean. So this is a very clean, fastidious Malach. So therefore, when you have a nicely made bed for him, that's the kind of thing that attracts him. And therefore, so you have this bed set up in order to attract the Malach, and this way, when the Malach of riches is in your house, then it'll be a segula that you'll become richer. So that would be one reason for it. The Shittim Kobetas says it a little differently. He says the vote is that you're doing it in honor of that Malach. That Malach, after all, is the messenger of Hashem. So you're honoring him by having a clean bed for him, sort of like the way we have a kos shel Eliyahu by the Seder. The Ran gives a different explanation. The Ran says that the vote is that by doing that, you're showing that you have more than what you need. You're showing Hashem gave me. I don't just have exactly enough as I need for my needs. I don't just have barely enough beds for my family. I even have an extra bed. So therefore, you're with that. That brings a person to thank Hashem for the fact that he has more than he needs. And then that way, that brings more bracha to him. Anyway, so Ula is saying that Arsa de Gada is what we're talking about over here by Darvish. So we're saying you wouldn't have to turn it over because nobody sleeps on it anyway, but you would have to stand it on end. The problem with that is, Omale Rabba, but Rabba says, Elame after Gamimelech, if you're going to say the word Darvish means this Arsa de Gada, this bed of good fortune, then consider what it says about a king who's in Avelus. The Tnan, the Mishnah and Sanhedrin tells us, when it comes to the Suda Savra, everybody else by the Suda Savra is sitting on the floor, but the king, because he's more distinguished, he sits and he reclines on the Dargish and eats the Suda Savra that way. How could it be? Says Rabba. How could it be that up until now we never had anybody sit on that bed because it's reserved for Mazel, the Hashtam Isvinim Lay, and now we're going to have the king sit on it? What's the logic? Maski for Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi questions back on Rabba's question. My kusha, why is that so hard to understand? Midi to have a achil or shia. After all, it's no different than eating and drinking. The ad hashda loyechline v'layashkine. We never offered food and drink to the king because he's the king. He has his own food and drink and so forth. Hashda ichline v'ashkine. But here with the Suda Savra, the din is that we have to give him food and drink because that's how the Suda Savra works. So, by Avelus, we do things differently. Maybe by Avelus also, we have him sit for the first time on the Arsa de Gada. So that's not a valid question. Ela I kasha ho kasha. Rather, the question would be as follows. The Tnan, or the Tanya, really. This is the Braisa that we quoted before. Dargish ain't it tzorech lechboisoi. We said that you don't have to turn over a dargish when a person is an oval. Ela zoik for you just turn it right. So you just turn it on end. The question would be, the Arsa de Gada, if the dargish means an arsa de gada, amai ein etzarach lechboisei. Why would you not have to turn it over? V'hatnan or v'hatanya, we learned in the braisa, hakoifa mitosei, when a person turns over his bed, loy mitosei bolvadu koifa, he doesn't just turn over his own bed, elakomit, just yesh lebesech beisei koifa, he has to turn over all the bed. Well, the arsa de gada is a bed, why should he not have to turn it over? Why is the braisa telling us that he just has to turn it on its side? Well, it says, amai kasha, so what kind of a kasha is that? You could answer very simple. Midi dehaber amitam yuchedes for kalim, because it's like a bed that's reserved for kalim. The Tanya, and we just said in the Brayse, hoisam mitam yuchedes for kalim ain't it tzorach lechboisa. So that doesn't prove anything. Yeah, maybe you don't have to turn it over. You know why? Because it's not reserved for any person to sleep on. It's reserved for the malach of mazel, this malach nokid, like we said before, and therefore, so it's like a mitam yuchedes for kalim, and that would be reason enough why you don't have to turn it over. So that doesn't necessarily prove that the dargish can't be that. Ela ikasha hokasha. Rather, the question that we can ask is as follows. We said Reb Shimon Gamliel, and the bright said Reb Shimon Gamliel says, dargish matir karbitov, that with a dargish, what you do is you undo the loops, vuhu noifu me'elav, and then it falls down on its own. So the question would be, v'isakadaydach arisa de gada. If you're telling me that the dargish is the arisa de gada, my kavitin isle. It doesn't have any loops. It's made like every other bed in the house, where the beds, as we learned before, were made. They had a wooden frame where then they wove ropes over and under the frame to make a network, and then that would be the surface that they'd put the mattress on. So there's no loops over there. So what loops would Reb Shimon Gamliel be saying that you undo in order to make it fall down? So therefore, because of that, we can't say that a dargish is an arsa de gada. So rather, ki osa Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, omalei ahumen abonon v'tachlifa b'amar Rava shnei, one of the chachamim named Reb Tachlifa b'amar Rava, to have a shriach b'shuka divrudoi, this Reb Tachlifa b'amar Rava used to be commonly found in the marketplace of the leather workers. So he told it. So he told Robin, my dargish arsa de tzala. What is a dargish? It means a bed made out of leather. So in other words, again, the regular beds in those days, you had a wooden frame, and then you had ropes woven over and under the frame to make a pattern to make a network, and then they'd put the mattress on them. Instead, an arsidat sala is a bed where you have a wooden frame, and then you have a piece of leather which is attached with loops to the frame, and then that provides the surface to put the mattress on. So now we understand, therefore, why we're saying that the rules for turning it over are different. So the Rosh or the Ritva, I don't remember which one, explains the Vorta, the Ritva, I think, explains that if you were to turn it over, the problem is then the leather surface would be on the ground, and the ground, you know, they had dirt floors in those days. So it would get room. So therefore, the Tanakhama says that all you have to do is turn it on its side. That way, the leather is not touching the floor, is not touching the ground, and it doesn't get damaged. And according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, what you do is you undo the loops, and the leather falls down. So fine, the back side of the leather, the underside of it, which is not what you're sleeping on anyway, is going to be on the ground. Big deal. If that side gets ruined, nobody cares anyway because nobody sleeps on it. The top side, which is what you normally sit or lie on, that one will stay in good shape. So Itmar Nami, in fact, it said also a statement of Amaroyim. Omer Rav Yirmiya, Dargish Sirugi Mitochoi. The difference is that a Dargish, the weaving of what holds it up is from the inside of it. Mita Siruga Al Gabe, as opposed to a bed where the weaving of it is done over it. Meaning, when it comes to a regular bed, the way they did it is they'd have ropes wrapped around the wooden frame, and then their inner pattern over there to make a network, to the shesi ve'erev, like we learned previously. Whereas with a dargish, now that we're saying that a dargish has a surface made out of leather, so that leather has loops attached to it, and those loops go into holes in the frame, and then you tie it all around, and then you tie each one of those loops in place through one of those holes. So we see that a dargish is built differently. So a dargish is not an arsa de gada, which is built the same as a regular bed. Rather, it's an arsa de tzala, a leather bed, which is built differently than a regular one. Okay. So Omer Rav Yaakov Ba'acha, Omer Rav Shimon Levi, Halacha K'Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Halacha is like K'Rav Shimon Gamliel. You don't turn it on its side. You just undo the loops and let the leather fall down on the ground. Itmar Nami, Omer Rav Yaakov Ba'acha, Omer Rav Asi, Mita Shenakutel Yotzin. Here's another din in this connection. If you have a bed where the naklitin stick out of it, so you have in the Mishnayis Sukkah, for example, it talks about you have a naklite hamita. That is where you have a bed that has two holes sticking above it, one at the head of the bed, one at the foot of the bed. And then what you do is you spread out a sheet over the bed to serve as a canopy. It can be for privacy, it can be to keep out bugs, whatever it is exactly. So the point is, when you have a bed like that with two naklitin, you can't turn it upside down, because then it won't stand on the two naklitin. So therefore it's just enough to stand it on end, and that's good enough. Or another explanation of zoikva is that you take off the two naklitin and that itself, and then you just leave the bed as is, and that's considered enough of a change. Now, on the other hand, the Rishonim point out, if it's not naklitin, if it's what the Mishnah in Sukkah there calls a kinoif, where it's a four-poster bed, then you would have to turn it over, because then it can stand during the Shiva on the four posts that are on the corner. But again, Rishonim say one reason why we don't do Kfiyas Hamita nowadays is because our beds are constructed differently than theirs. The corner pieces stick up above the mattress, and therefore if you turn it over, it's not really as noticeable anyway. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braita. Yoshin Agabe Kisei, if the oval sleeps on a chair, or Agabe Udyoni Gdola, or on top of a big Udyoni. So we talked about previously, and there's a couple of different possibilities what an Udyoni is. It can mean a large mortar like that would be used for grinding things up. It can be like a thing that's used to cover a well or something. And on the side of it here, it refers to a Tosfos in Baba Basra that says that it's a large kind of thing, like a step stool sort of, that a person would stand on in order to see for a distance. So if he's sleeping on that, or even Al-Gabe Karko, even if he's sleeping on the ground, lo yotze yidei chevasei, then he's not yotze. He has to do kriyas hamita. So again, according to the Rambam, what it means is actually he has to sleep on the overturned bed. It's not just enough to turn over the bed. He has to actually sleep on it. And therefore, if he turned over the bed but then slept on one of these other things, then he's not yotze. According to many other Rishonim, he doesn't have to sleep on the overturned bed, but the point is, if he's going to think, I don't have to turn over my bed, just for the next week, I'll sleep on a chair, or I'll sleep on an Yoni Gdola, or whatever, then that's no good. He has to turn over the bed. Then, where he wants to sleep, that's his business. So what does it mean? Lo yotzi dechivase. Amar Rav Yechanan shloikiyim kviyas amita means that if he does that, he didn't keep properly the mitzvah midrabanan of turning over his bed. Tana rabanan, we learn in a brisa mechabdin ma'bitin debesa evil. We can sweep the floor and we can sprinkle water to keep the dust down in the house of an oval. We can wash dishes, plates and cups and jugs and bottles in the base of oval. However, we do not bring incense or spices or perfumes to a base of oval. Mugma is they would take various kinds of incense, various kinds of spices and whatever, and burn them so it would make a nice aroma in the room. So you don't do those in a base of oval, because those already are more malchustic than is appropriate for a base of oval. The Gemara says, "Any, is that so?" But Hatoni Bar Kapora, didn't Bar Kapora teach a brisa ein mevorchin loyal amugma v'loyal b'samim beisa evil, that you don't make a bracha on mugmar ubsamim in a house of avelos, implying baruch yehud lo mevorchin ha asuyim asinan. So it implies that we don't say bracha on it, but we can bring it there, and you're saying that we can't. And the answer is like Kasha, Hobba Besa Oval, Hobba Besa Menachemim. It depends whether we're talking about the house of the Oval, where in the house of the Oval himself, you don't bring Mugma and Besamim over there, Hobba Besa Menachemim, as opposed to in the houses and in the rooms of the people, the Menachemim, the ones who are bringing him food, they can have Mugma and Besamim in their houses. They just don't make a bracha on it. Slightly differently, there are Rishonim who explain that Beis HaMenachemim would be when the Oval is not present, then you're allowed to have Mugma and Besamim, and Beis HaOval would be when the Oval is present. The Mishnah says, Ein Melichin the Beis HaOval, continuing on this topic of the Suda Savra, of how the food being, again, on the first day after, on the day of the Kvura, the oval does not eat his own food. Other people bring food to him, and the reason for that, by the way, there's a few different reasons that are given. One of them, the Rosh says, because the oval is so upset right at the beginning over there, he doesn't want to eat bichlal. As far as he's concerned, he'd like to die along with his relative. So therefore, he might starve himself to death, chas v'shalom, and therefore we require that other people bring him food in order to forestall that. After that first day, then he's a little calmer, so then we allow him to eat on his own. So ein melichin the beis ha'ovel, you don't bring the food for the Suda Savra to the house of the ovel, loy b'tavla, not on a tavla, which is a fancy kind of table, v'loy b'iskutla, or in a skutla. Rashi translates iskutla as tamchui, which means a large serving dish. There's a couple of other explanations among Rishonim, but it's basically some kind of fancy dish. And not in a konoin, which is, again, there's a few possibilities what it is, but one of them is a large basket. Elabasalim, only in small baskets, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain, because poor people can't afford these fancy dishes. The Ein Omen Birkas Abelim B'moyed. On Chol HaMoed, we do not say Birkas Abelim. We've learned several times previously that they would say a special bracha by the Suda Savra that Hashem should be Menachem Avelim. So we don't say that during Chol HaMoed. In fact, we don't have the Suda Savra in the street at all. They used to have the Suda Savra in the street, but Chol HaMoed, you don't do that. Aval Oimdin Mashura, but even on Chol HaMoed, you do stand in a Shura. The Menachemim stand over there on the side, and the Ovel walks past, and they tell him, Amokam Menachem Eskem. So that you do, Umenachemim, and they comfort him by saying, Amokam Menachem Eskem, Upoitunas Arabim, and then the Abelim can tell the people, you can go home, you can dismiss them. Continues the Mishnah, Ein Manichenes HaMitah Baruchoyv, on Chol HaMoed, you do not put the mitah that the mess is on it in the street. You don't put it down in the street to make a hesped. It's a hesped. So in order not to give people too much of an idea of making a hesped, because on Chol HaMoed you don't do a hesped. So therefore, if they put down the mitzvah in the middle of the street, people are going to start crying and making a spadim, and we want to avoid that on Chol HaMoed. As far as a woman's mitzvah, you never put it down in the street, but now covered because of the cupboard, because it can happen that even after she passes away, that blood flows out of her and it would be ignite, so therefore we never put her down. We're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow a source and a pasuk for that. So the Gemara says, turn it up on him. We learn in a Braisa. There's a bunch of things that the Chachamim made the rules for Avelus and for the Avelus and for the Kavura and whatever that the Chachamim made that everybody should do the same thing in order that the poor people should not be embarrassed. So turn it up on him. Originally, when people are bringing food to the Beis HaOvel, Ashirim b'kolosis shokesef shalzav, so rich people would be bringing them in baskets or trays made out of gold and silver. V'aniim the salin etzarim shalarov klopa, the poor people who couldn't afford that would be bringing in baskets made out of peeled arovos. V'hoyu aniim misbaishim, so the poor people were getting embarrassed. Hiskinu, so the Chachamim made a takana, shiyakom v'aniim the salin etzarim shalarov klopa, everybody should be bringing in simple baskets made out of arovos. Because of the cover to the poor people, so they shouldn't be embarrassed. Tananabonon, here's another one, but it's showing how you mashkin the Vesa Oval. Originally, when they gave drinks to the Oval, they would give him wine to drink, because wine helps ease the pain. The Gemara in Ksubas, in fact, tells us that they used to give him 10 cups of wine to drink. So originally, Ashirim Vishokas Lavana, the rich people would use clear glass, would use glasses made out of clear glass, crystal. The poor people who couldn't afford that would use colored glass. So the poor people are getting embarrassed. In particular, also, the Rambam explains the poor people would use colored glass because they didn't have such good quality wine. So like this, you see the wine in a colored glass, you can't see the original color of it, so therefore it looks better than it is. But therefore, the poor people were getting embarrassed that they have to disguise their bad wine using colored glasses like that. His skin was, and they made a takana. She are called mashkin. This whole tzvua that everybody should use colored glasses with nekvod and shamanim because of the covered of the poor people. Another one, but ishono hoy megalin pnei ashirim. Originally, they would leave the faces of the rich people uncovered by the levaya. Umachasin pnei aniim, and they would keep the faces of the aniim covered. Mepneishoy moshchorin pnei mepnei batzoras. Because what would happen is, in a time of famine, in a time of drought and famine, people would be starving, and therefore the faces of the poor people would turn black, would turn dark from starvation. So it was embarrassing to show their faces. Whereas the rich people, they would have the faces uncovered. And Mephoshim explained that actually that would help increase the Avelos. People would say, look at this guy. So he looks so healthy, and yet he passed away. But again, the poor people are getting embarrassed that they're being treated differently. His skin, so they made a takana that you cover everybody's faces when make burden shalanim because of the covered of the poor people. This is why, based on this Gemara, that you don't uncover the face of the mess. After they passed away and after they did the Tara, you don't uncover the face, based on this Gemara. Another one, originally they would carry out the bodies of the rich people on a dargish, on a leather cot, like we said before. The poor people, they would carry on a klicha. Rashi says, mita shel mesim, a stretcher such as is used for mesim. Tosfos discusses a little bit exactly what a klicha is. It can mean something that has slats that are a little far apart. It can mean something more. Some of the Rishonim say that it can mean something more like a cage, whatever. The poor people are getting embarrassed. So they made it a kana that everybody should use a klicha, should use a stretcher, because of the cover to the poor people. Another one. Originally, when a person passed away from a stomach disease, and therefore, so their body would stink much more than usual because of what came out of them. So therefore, they would put mugmur, they'd put incense to burn under the body in order to help mask the smell. Living people who have such intestinal diseases, we're getting embarrassed by that. That look, even when we're dead, they're treating us differently than regular mason. So they made a takana that they should put mugmur under all the body in order to honor the living people with stomach diseases. So everybody gets mugmur under them now. Another one. Now, not all of these things that we do nowadays. Nobody puts mugmur by a body nowadays, for example. But okay, in those times they did. Another one, originally they would tovel when a woman was a nidya and then she passed away. So now you have the various blankets and bedclothes and things like that were used for her while she was alive. They would tovel them because a nidya touches anything, she makes it tummy. So therefore, so those who make an avatuma. So therefore, so they would so they would tovel all these kalim that were used for a woman who was nida. After she passed away, they would take all the bedclothes and all the other things that had been used for her while she was alive and tovel them. Well, your nidis chayis misbaishes, but the living nidis are getting embarrassed that again that we're going to do something different for them than we do with everybody else. So they made a takana. From now on, all the bed clothes and all the everything, all the accessories and everything that are used for a woman are tovel, regardless whether she's a nidir or not. Nick Boden shall nidis chayis because of the covet of the living nidis. This is obviously when they had to be careful with the dinim of tumah v'tahara. We don't do this nowadays. Another one, but he's shown him akbil and agabi zovin mesim. By the same token, with men, if a man passed away as a zov, then the same thing. They would have to tovel all the bedclothes and all the accessories they used for him, because again, as a zov, he's metamidim. But again, the living zovim are embarrassed. His skinush, you must build an agaba kol. So they made a takana that they have to tovel the accessories and everything that are used for all patients, the pnekvodan shall zavim chayim, in order to, because of the covet of the living zavim, in order not to treat them differently than everybody else. And the last thing, barishona hoisa hitsas a mess koshal a krovav, yosem misase. Originally, the taking out and burying of the mess was even more difficult for the relatives than the actual death. Because they used to use very expensive tachrichin and people couldn't afford it. It got to the point where the relatives would leave the body and run away because they couldn't afford the expense. Until Rav Gamliel came along and changed that. He acted in a casual way about himself. Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is that he gave orders that they should do this when he himself passed away. The other possibility, Tosfos says, when one of his relatives passed away, then he did the following. The yotze b'klei pishton, that he used linen tachrichim, which are cheap. The nargo alachra of lotzes b'klei pishton, and therefore everybody else followed that minhag, and they started using linen tachrichim, which are cheap. Omer ha-papa, so ha-papa says, v'ha-idna, nowadays, Nohuk Alma, the people have a minig, I feel a bit srada bar zoza, they'll use even srada, which is a cloth made out of hemp, which is a very low quality cloth, which is worth only a zuz. People will use even that because people have gotten used to the idea that tachrichim should be relatively cheap, which is how we do nowadays. That tachrichim, there's an Indian that the tachrichim should be white, but they're just made out of plain white linen or maybe white, some other material, I don't know, but they're made relatively cheap. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "Ein manichnas amita barachov." We said you don't put down on Chol HaMoed. You don't put down the mita in the street because that's going to cause people to start crying and making a stadium, and we don't want that on Chol HaMoed. So Amar Papa, "Ein moed b'fnei tamid chacham." When it comes in the presence of a tamid chacham, there's no moed, meaning you're allowed to cry and make a stadium for him, even no Chol HaMoed. V'chol shekin Chanukah Purim. How much more so that if it's on Chanukah Purim, that for a tamid chacham you're going to be allowed. However, that applies only when it's in the presence, only when the Talmid Chacham himself, when his body is there. Avashaloi b'fun of loy, but not when it's not in his presence, then you can't make a spadim and cry for him on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, Eini, is that so? B'hor of Kahana safte l'rav Zvid min ha'hodor b'fum na'ara. Don't we find that one time on Chol HaMoed, Rav Kahana made a hesped for Rav Zvid min ha'hodor in Pum Na'ara, which is a different city? The answer is Omar Papa, Yom Shmua Hava. The answer is that was the day that they found out that they got the news in Pum Na'ara that Rav Zvid min ha'hodor had passed away. Uchavifon of Dami. Therefore, it's considered like it was in his presence. So they were allowed to. But in other words, if it had been after they found out we have another day they're going to make a hesped, then they wouldn't have been able to do that during Chol HaMoed because of Shaloi B'fon. Okay, so the Gemara says, what is the definition of hesped? Oma'ula hesped alay. A hesped involves that the person beats with his hands and his fists on his heart. Dichtiv al shadayim softim, as we find a passage that describes women beating their chest and softim and crying. So we see that the definition of hesped is where you do that kind of thing. Tipuach v'yad. Now we're going to learn in the last Mishnah of Amasechta, we'll learn tomorrow about the time, that there's something called tipuach that involves. That involves slapping the hands against each other to arouse people's emotion. Kilus beregel, and then there's something else called tilus, which involves stamping the feet on the ground. So in this connection, turn on a bottom. We learn in a brisa, hamakalus lo yikalus besandol elabamino. When a person is doing this kilos, when he's stamping on the ground in expression of abelos, he should not do it wearing a sandal elabamino, but rather only with a shoe mipnei sakona, because of the danger. What's the danger? Rashi explains a sandal is more loosely bound around the foot. It has a leather sole and it has straps. So if a person is wearing sandals and he's stamping hard on the ground like that, what might happen is in the course, while he's doing that, the sandal might get turned around. Then all of a sudden he's banging with his bare foot on the ground, not realizing that he doesn't have a sandal there to protect him anymore, and he's going to break his foot. Rashi Ksavyad has a girsa the other way around, that he should do not with a minol, but rather with a sandal, because the idea is, according to that, a minol is made of soft leather and it's not going to protect his foot, whereas a sandal is made out of hard leather and it will. And Tosfos brings a girsa from Rabbi Nachmanano that it's neither. It shouldn't be a minol or a sandal. Better let him do it barefoot, because if he's doing it barefoot to begin with, he's going to know, I'm barefoot, I better be careful that there's nothing there that's going to hurt my foot. Whereas if he uses either a minol or a sandal, then something may penetrate his foot. And nowadays we don't do this kilos anyway, but when they did it, then this was something to be careful about. To be continued tomorrow, Baruch Hashem.